Hello and welcome to the very 292nd episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games and the people who love board games. I'm joined as ever by Matt.
Hello.
And today it's the Nature Special.
La, 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 la.
An all natural podcast.
I'm a butterfly floating through the field of opportunities and dreams.
I am completely nude.
And all of the crops have been removed from this field, churned up and mulched up into lovely board games.
Ooh.
Which means there's no leaves or fronds for which Tom can hide behind and hide his little board gamer genitals. This is a podcast all about board games.
Why do they have to be little?
That's a good question. Ask your doctor.
This is a podcast about board games, and we're going to talk about three of them on this podcast.
All of which are slightly related to nature.
To nature, to the concept of being outdoors, in the sun, in the sky, with the birds and the trees.
Yeah, like animals and stuff.
Yeah, but we're playing them all inside.
Yes.
In our nice heated homes.
Out of cardboard, which is dead trees.
We're going to talk about three games on this podcast. We're going to start by talking about Nature, a game of evolving a dinosaur so much that it eats everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Perch, a game of being birds on a fountain and being arseholes.
Basically like pigeons being dickheads.
Yeah, okay, great. And we're going to talk about Tembo, Survival on the Savannah, a game about trying to tactically eat an elephant.
Wow.
First up on this podcast, we're going to talk about Nature. This is a 2025 game designed by Dominic Crapachet with art by Catherine Hamilton, Alyssa McCarthy, and Nina Pommelin, published by North Star Games Studio. And it's kind of a spiritual successor sequel, a re-implementation, a reiteration, a remaster of the Evolution series, which started with Evolution, continued with Oceans, and now has metamorphosed, has evolved, if you will, into Nature.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that Evolution had so many different expansions and little bits and bobs and modules that it doesn't make sense that they've kind of brought it back to be something that's a little bit more cleanly modular from the start, rather than being one of those things where you look at it and go, okay, well, where do I go from here? You know, I think when you have a base game and then a bunch of expansions, there is always that question of like, what is the machete cut? Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, what's the one to add next?
Right.
And you usually have to delve into some pretty gnarly Reddit forums or Board Game Geek threads to work out like, which is the expansion
is the one that I really
need?
These
four things? And people will be like, well, this one's just more pieces. And you're like, okay, well, that wasn't clear.
And I like how, like, right off the bat, Nature sort of bills itself as a modular game system. And it seems like each of the different modules that you can acquire kind of has a different flavor to them straight away.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you want your game of nature to be more like engine buildy and cozy, then maybe you get birds.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to eat other people's creatures, then you go dinosaur mode, because then you get to make a big creature and it goes boom.
So just like in the base game of Evolution, this is a game where you're basically building out these creatures and you're doing so by placing these cards on the table, which reflect the traits of things. And then you keep adding traits to things until you have a creature that's, let's say, armored and has claws and is really big. And then you have an interesting little situation where you have both the size of a creature and its population that you're manipulating with these tokens. And then it means that at the end of each round, everything's going to eat.
Yes.
And there's going to be a limited amount of food available. So you have like a watering hole area in the middle, which is all like nice vegetarian shared food.
Lovely.
Which is going to be first come, first serve. And in the first few rounds of the game, not a problem, right?
It's real chill.
You just all have a nibble
on
the grass.
Everyone has a snack. It's fine.
There's enough for everyone. But quite quickly, there isn't enough for everyone. And then people start evolving their creatures to be hunters, at which point they are, you know, eating other people's creatures. Or sometimes you're just scavengers, which means like when other creatures are eating, you're getting some food from somewhere.
Yes.
Or people who are just mean, who just jump in and take food from the shared area before anyone else has had a chance to even look at it.
Yeah.
It's a fun little interactive puzzle of trying to grow out. It's basically like you're trying to grow out a Euro engine and build a really big engine if you can, but Unlike in most games where you build out a big engine and it exponentially gets you more and more points, in this game it will do that, but only if other people don't eat your engine.
Yeah, only if there's enough food to go around, or if you've built your engine in such a way that means that it just kind of runs out of fuel.
Yes.
You can often have situations where you've made a creature that is very big and very terrifying, but there's so much of it to feed that there's not enough other stuff to go around for you to put into that engine, basically.
And suddenly it's like, oh, well, it would have worked, but unfortunately you're all eating too, which means mine can't eat, and now they die.
Now I've got to eat my own engine, because that can happen. If you've got a hunter and it can't eat anyone else's stuff because it's too armored or fast, then you have to cannibalize your own stuff. And I like the way that it punishes greedy players.
We have prey at home.
We do. I liked in this game making like a sort of throwaway species. It's just snack time.
Yeah.
It's like, here's my insurance species for if it all goes wrong, I will eat it gladly.
The backup plan.
The backup plan, exactly. An evolutionary backup plan. This is like an interesting game because I think that at its core, it's really, really simple. They've like taken pains to make sure that nature's sort of core box, the first thing that you buy, is really straightforward. All of the cards have that kind of reading the card explains the card sort of mentality. You can explain the entire game in like 5 minutes, and playing it does not take long at all. It's really, really peppy because you only play four rounds.
Yep.
Lasts like half an hour or something like that, maybe even less if you're nippy. And so all of the game is in this very like limited card pool, and there's a lot of like bluff and strategy in working out which traits people are likely to have put on their creatures each round. Because, you know, you could be building up for this big hunter turn where you're going to eat your opponent's, you know, giant creature sat opposite you, and then suddenly they've made it nimble and now it's dodging out the way and you've got nothing to eat.
And also it's very satisfying when you can make people terrified and suddenly they start investing in making all of their creatures like armored and again like agile, so they can get away, they can hide, they can defend themselves.
Yeah.
And then you just don't do it.
Yeah.
And then people are like, whatever. Oh, because you can't put that many traits on each creature. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of wasting them if you're creating defenses that you then don't need.
Yeah, you get 3 traits per creature, and if you want to make something a hunter, that's a whole trait that you're spending on doing so. So you need to be quite savvy about what kind of engine you're building.
I think what's interesting about nature is the fact that because it is, as you say, like in many ways the mechanics of the game are very, very similar to those of Evolution. But it feels like almost like a video game remaster in a way that like I can't quite remember what's different and how it's better.
Yeah.
It feels like the game I remember, whereas I know if I go back and try and play Evolution, that I remember at the time it was like definitely a little fiddly and clunky and like one of those games that if you could get people into it, it was really great.
Yeah.
But I love that they really have smoothed off the edges in the ways that I can't really even tell how.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of kind of hard. It's a remaster or re-implementation in kind of the best way, which is that you can't really see what they've changed, but it feels kind of like smooth and sort of as you remember it. Although it is really funny that for some reason I've misplaced the watering hole in the core of my copy of Nature. I can't find it anywhere, so I just use the watering hole from Evolution.
How and it's have you lost the watering hole?
I don't know. I have a feeling, I mean, maybe I do know. I think it ended up in the big box version of All Nature right. that's at yours.
Oh, okay.
And I've got the small box version of Nature, which is here.
Well, that's an easy fix.
That is an easy
fix. I was beginning to worry that your flat represented some sort of black hole.
Because where board game components go missing.
We did play a game a while ago where the galaxy map disappeared.
Gone forever.
There was no galaxy. You lost an entire galaxy
from
somewhere.
From a sealed copy of a game.
I mean, I don't know how that happened. I think may have been a magic trick.
Yes, yeah. So the other thing about Nature, so I will say before moving on to some of the modular stuff that I think is kind of the highlight of this game, I will talk very briefly about in the kind of refining and remastering process, I do feel like Nature has lost a little bit of the kind of wow factor in just the base box. I think maybe the game to compare it to here is Oceans, which we both really loved and you reviewed a while back.
Yep.
And Oceans had this this kind of base game that was quite tight and mean, and then it had the deep deck, which had all of these crazy trait cards that were all unique or mostly unique.
Yeah.
And they would just kind of make your creatures just absurd in all these really interesting ways. But also I feel like Oceans had a lot more synergies within your species. You would have these situations where you had like parasitic or scavenger species that would key off of each other, and that does live on in Nature to some extent. There is a literal scavenger card that you can play, but more often than not you're looking around the table at other people's engines and how you can eat theirs rather than looking at making your own little engine between your different species.
Yeah.
in nature, which is just a different flavor thing, right?
Yeah, Oceans, pardon the pun, but Oceans is more of a deep dive, I think, into like it feeling like, okay, let's get into like sea ecosystems in a way that was, again, the whole package. They did do an expansion for that, which was like mythical sea creature stuff, I think, which I think would be quite fun. I never got around to trying. But in itself, like the having the basic cards and then the deep, which was just the odd deep sea traits, was enough to really give you a full evocative feeling of the ocean. Yeah. Whereas I think, what they've done here with nature is interesting. It feels a bit like ordering a burrito in the fact that if you just order a burrito and just say no to all of the extras, then you end up with something that's perhaps a palatable but a little bland.
I think that's really fair. Like, I think that nature, just the base box, if you just bought that on a shop shelf, you'd have like an okay time. You'd be like, yeah, this is fun, like this is all right. But I think it really gets interesting when you start adding in those modules. So the ones that I have tried are the Jurassic module, which adds the dinosaurs, and the flight module, which adds birds. Funnily enough, the dinosaurs are the ones that live larger in my mind, so I'm mostly going to talk about that one.
Well, I love that it's like, you know, inside of us are two wolves, and that's, you very much, I think, zoned in directly on the psyche of the board game reviewer there, whereas you've gone, well, what do I want? Fundamentally, I want this to be a crunchier, more Euro-y puzzle game.
Right.
Birds. Mm-hmm. And then, but also I'm a 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Which means I cannot help but try dinosaurs. And also I saw the fact that the dinosaur wheels, that this game has like cardboard wheels, which is definitely one of the ways that the game has improved upon the original, to track the size of a species, I believe, isn't it? Or is it the population?
Yeah, the size.
The
How
size
big
of the species
the individual thing is.
It's tracked by one of those little like wooden tracker wheels. And I've just seen that the dinosaur wheels, they go big.
They go really big.
Because usually the species got to like 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, and these got to 10, I think.
Yeah, it's not even like a bit bigger. It's like, what?
Yeah, I think that you really see what the game is going for when you play with the dog dang dinosaurs.
Now we're playing with dinosaurs.
Because immediately you are making these like savage creatures and you're beating each other up all the time.
Yep.
Like, it's so in your face and mean and like, it's so much more offensive when you're playing with them. It just changes the game like immediately. Like a really simple example of that is normally you have to play a whole card to be, I'm making this species a hunter. But the dinosaur cards, a bunch of them will make you a hunter and they'll do something else. So it's like already it's kind of pushing you towards an engine where making hunters is so much more viable and so much more enjoyable.
So it's like you're channel hopping from Planet Earth to Robot Wars.
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. For the British people of a certain age out there.
But there's also, you can combine the modules as well, and you can have it so that you have dinosaurs and birds and the base game all in one situation. I think that really lends itself to having these much more diverse ecosystems and allowing a lot of like player expression.
Right.
You can kind of choose what path you're going down. You could go full into dinosaur and draw all your cards off of that deck and become the most aggressive player around the table. Or you could say, I'm just going to go all birds and sit in the corner and fly away from the dinosaurs.
All right.
And not worry about that.
Okay, interesting.
Or you can do a little bit of both and make a horrible flying raptor.
So you do, when you're playing with multiple modules, you do have control over it. It's not a mix it all together job. You have something where you can choose what you want to spec into.
When you draw cards, so you'll always be drawing like 5 cards every round and then choosing how you want to deploy them for like traits or making your species bigger or making them.
Like you're saying, deploy them. You live in dinosaur land.
Field
now.
Them.
You're in the dinosaur wars. Nature is gone.
But you can choose when you draw those cards, you can choose from what deck you draw them.
Right.
So you could say, I'm going to draw all 5 of my cards are going to be dinosaur cards, which means that you're just setting all the dials to kill.
Yeah.
Or you can do sort of one from the top, one from the middle, one from the bottom kind of situation. Countdown style.
Interesting. So is there any limit to how many of these modules you can play with at once?
I don't think so.
Is there an encouraged limit?
Yeah. I imagine the like encouraged limit is probably like 2.
Yeah, that makes
3 would become crazy. But I do think that with both modules in play, the game becomes something really quite unique, which is that it does really start to feel like an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that I am an absolute sucker for games that have a strong sense of ecosystem. And I think it really nails it. The main problem, I guess, is just that it's quite a high upfront cost. I'm saying that not knowing how much these boxes actually cost.
Yeah.
But if they were, you know, 20 quid a pop, it's like to get one iteration of a weird little sandbox ecosystem, you have to spend like 60 quid.
Mm-hmm.
But also, citation needed. I've no idea how much these actually cost. Maybe I'll come in now and tell you. If you're buying Nature from the publisher directly, then the base box will set you back £31, and the modules range from between 19 for the cheapest and 23 for the most expensive.
So the pricing that Tom has just jumped in and added into the podcast now will definitely inform all of this to a certain degree. But I think that it sounds very interesting, and it sounds like it's almost like if you've got a selection of these little modules, then you're almost cooking something that's a bit of a nature-y version of Cosmic Encounter to a degree,
right,
of being able to have something where if you can put them together in different combinations, you're going to have strangely different games. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like quite a fun puzzle to unpick with other people as you're playing, of being like, what happens if we mix this with this?
Yeah.
Like, how's that going to impact the style of the game?
Mm. And it's not just one puzzle. Like, you can kind of spec into different versions of the puzzle within even that game. Like, I think that this really starts to sing when you start adding those modules.
Honestly, I think with stuff like that, it's really tough because it's like, you know, it's not just the expense of the game, it's the fact that these modules come in boxes that are quite large as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it is one of those things where it's difficult to get into too much of a discussion about who's it for, what might it be worth, when you have the fact that there's an upfront cost and upfront space cost. It's the sort of thing I feel like it could be somebody's favorite game,
right?
But also like it could be something that most people will look at and go, what on earth? I mean, Cosmic Encounter, for example,
right,
my copy of that doesn't really seal anymore, mm-hmm, because I'm not keeping all of the expansions in the boxes. It's mm-hmm all going in there.
Oh yeah.
But it's just crammed in mm-hmm in an unholy manner. And if my Cosmic Encounter collection had to be like 6 or 7 boxes, mm, I don't know if I still have it.
I think that's the strange thing as well with nature, is that to sort of experience the game at its best, there is quite a high upfront cost because you need to try it with different modules to really get this kind of ecosystem feeling that I was looking for. And I can imagine people playing just the base game as it is and being like, oh, this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think it is. I think it's good enough.
And I think you found that you didn't get to play it many... Every time you played it, you were playing it with new people, right?
Yes.
Which meant you didn't really get to do that deep dive.
Yeah.
Because you were
showing
people
the base box.
Yeah.
And there's not... Like, it didn't excite people that much if they're not seeing the potential in what the modules could do. So you're often just playing the base game and everyone goes, yeah, that's all right. Can we play something else?
I do love the idea of having a game that's kind of like a basic game that then you like add some spice to, and what kind of an experience do you want? Mm. Okay, well, let's get this and this. But, you know, maybe you don't know if you want pinto beans or black beans until you've tried them both. So
exactly.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's a tricky burrito.
It is.
Next up on this podcast, Matt, you're going to tell me and the audience at home about Purge.
Purge, which
I thought you said
Purge.
I thought you called it Purge.
And I was like, yeah, it's a game about pigeons. And you're like, oh,
ooh. Wow. Put them in a plastic bag and smacking them up.
I mean, people say they are rats, so maybe that's the solution.
This is a game designed by Douglas Hetrick with art by Ari Oliver and published by Inside Up Games.
Mm.
It's got a cute cover. I'm looking at it right now.
It is. This is a nice game. I think it fits into that little window of a game that you go, oh, cool, a cute little game about pigeons and birds. And then you play it and you're like, oh, this is really mean.
This is really mean. That's like all the best games are a kind of little trap, aren't they? You start playing them and you're like, oh, nasty.
The way this game works is it's a pigeon placement game, mm-hmm, and it has a kind of slightly modular setup, slightly akin to that of CMYK's Spots, of having like, you know, these tiles that you put out, which are like action tiles for the game.
Okay.
And they're being a kind of like randomized setup, so you pull them out and it has like, you know, we just played the starter setup.
Just the beginner birds.
Just the beginner version, because I never played it before and I just want to have a little look at it. But the difference here is you are making a tiny little map almost. So you're putting these like 7 or 8 or 9 tiles, depending on how many people are playing with, I think. And then you're taking it in turns to place your pigeons mm-hmm out onto these spaces. And each of these tiles has an action.
Okay.
And some of them don't, but those ones are just for scoring points, because basically it's an area control thing where you're taking it in turns.
A pigeon control game.
Yeah. You're taking it in turns to put these things on, and at the end of the round, you're going to look at them and you're going to get points according to the majority of pigeons in those spaces.
Okay.
That's the first thing. First way it gets mean is the fact that sometimes, hey, it's not just like you get the most points for being first. Some cases, you get the most points for being second or third. So you actually want to just sneak in at the end and have one bird there.
I see.
Here's the next way that it's mean. Ties aren't just unfriendly. Ties are just horrible.
Okay.
Like, if you're tied for first, no one gets it.
Oh.
Like, if you're tied, you just don't get anything.
They're ties for enemies.
Yeah, it's really bad. Which means frequently, you just end up counting up points at the end of the round. And you're like, well, yeah, nobody really got any points.
Got that.
Because
we got that.
Both just playing it with two, And this is always a good sign. Yeah, I've only played this once, and I played with two, but I got the sense that you play this with three or four, and it's going to be like a really fun little like silly thing. Mm-hmm. Play with two, it's horrible.
It's really tense.
In a good way.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of games should have, like, if their two-player mode isn't tense and duel-like and nasty, I ain't interested.
Yeah, I think it's weirdly a good litmus test for a game that's great at three and four.
Right.
It's a game that's weirdly mean at two.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Because it gives you enough control that you can just be like, well, nobody's getting any points here. And then it means you've got options for chicanery. So you have these special tiles where if you win them, not only do you get points, you get control of a creature. These creature tokens go and sit in front of you, and they have a little power card, and they let you do something.
What kind of creatures are they?
You know, like squirrel.
Oh.
Owl.
Owl. Human.
No.
Antelope.
Some kind of other creature.
Ibex.
No.
Tortoise.
No. Maybe. There's a few. I didn't see all of them because, again, it's like this is kind of a modular setup thing.
There's like infinite animals in the world,
and so there's more animals with more players.
See all of them.
Exactly. Yeah. We could go through all of them, but most of them are quite small animals that you might see in a park.
Okay.
Because this is set up to be fundamentally a game of pigeon hierarchy, where you're going to get points from controlling different areas on this like made up board, but then also you have a second board, which is a fountain.
Now I saw the fountain.
Sending pigeons to the fountain. That's the big leagues, right? You get a pigeon on there, and on the first layer of the fountain, you just get a point for having them there at the end of the game.
Wow.
But you can then put a second layer, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points, 5 points, 6 points.
An ascending pigeon bonus.
But you have to have pigeons beneath it. It's a pigeon pyramid.
A pigeon pyramid.
Any of the pigeons that you're putting out onto the board playing with, they're never coming back. They're out there for the whole game, which means you have this kind of cumulative like scoring thing.
They're perma pigeons.
Yeah, a bit like in Mexico or something, where you have a thing where you're building out and you're building out control, and it's like that's going to affect your scoring for the rest of the game. Effectively having these creatures gives you control over the board because they can do things. Like the owl can swoop around the clockwise around the edge of the board. The squirrel can like move one space and then do something.
The humble squirrel.
But it has to stay near the trash can, I think, or something. Like, so then you realize that these tiles you have out that you're placing things on are kind of a slight map. There's tiny elements of the game where the locations of them affect other
things.
There's
a little bit of geography.
Little bit of geography.
Just a tiny
Not too lick. Much, just a little bit.
Okay, GCSE geography.
Exactly. But then the owl has the ability, for, let's say, to like fly around and then like send a pigeon from one of the places they fly over to the fountain. And I think the squirrel could swap. So you can replace something from a tile with something on the fountain, which means maybe another player has a really good point situation going on. And then you swap out your pigeon with their pigeon. But here's the rub.
Oh.
You do that and you're giving them more control on that space. But maybe that's a good thing, because maybe you're putting them in control of a space that you don't want.
Or you're tied for.
Or the person in first place gets no points, but the person in second place gets three or something. So there's lots of very little sneaky opportunities to be supplanting, to be removing, to be taking control of areas and feeling like you're in absolute control and then having other people sneak in. And then you've got elements like you have these fun little nests that you can click the birds into. And when you stack the birds, they literally kind of click on top of each other with little square backs to make little like they're perching on top of each other. It's very sweet.
That's why it's called perch.
That's
why it's called perch.
And then you can lock them in with little hats. You put a little roof on top of them. And it's like, yeah, you can't touch these birds now. They've got a roof over their heads. They got a house. They got rights. Yeah, I was surprised by how mean and tense and thoughtful this one was. It was a real cruncher. When you got towards the end of it, it was like, oh boy, this is making my brain hurt. It was very much one of those games where you are trying to be very sneaky and trying to wait till the last possible moment to work out when to strike. And a final thing, which I forgot to mention, it should have been really at the start, is the fact that you're not just placing your birds onto the board. Each round you're placing two of your birds and then you're drawing some from a bag, which is a mixture, which means you're always mainly placing your birds onto the thing, but you're also placing other people's birds.
I like that.
Which means you have a thing where you go, oh, for my turn I'm gonna put you in control of this area, which is just fun.
It reminds me of that other game of pigeon placement, Twilight Struggle, where you have cards in your hand that are just your opponent's cards, but you have to play them. And I like that in a game where you have to use someone else's stuff and you have to find out what the least bad option is.
Yeah.
Because I think it also does a really good job of like putting you in your opponent's shoes as well.
Yep.
So that you're thinking like they are rather than just thinking about your own puzzle. You're also like maybe spotting opportunities that they might take, you know, because you have to be them for a bit, which is lovely.
Yeah.
I'm into that. I'm into that a lot.
It's cool. Like it's, it was surprisingly, beefy and mean and featured, animals.
Thus making it acceptable for inclusion on this nature podcast.
This fully nature cast.
Yeah.
Tempo number five.
A little bit of elephants on my board. A little bit of elephants on my board,
a little bit of elephants on my board.
That's Tembo, Survival on the Savannah, a 2026 game designed by Asger Granerud, Mads Flo, Dan Halstad, and Daniel Pedersen, with art by Vincent Dutrait, Vinny D, and published by Sidekick Games. He really liked Vinny D, huh?
The delivery was fantastic.
Vinny D, of course, short for Vinny Delight.
Yes.
This is a game in which you are trying to get some elephants from one side of the savannah to the other.
Nightmare.
Without getting too tired or eaten by lions.
Those are the two problems I usually have when I'm trying to do that.
I'm going to preface this by saying that I really like Tembo. I have liked Tembo so much that I've played it a whole bunch this past month. But all the groups I've shown it to have not really liked Tembo that much.
Right.
And I think there's something about the fact that it's just... I'm going to preface this by saying this is a hard game.
Okay.
I think it is very difficult, and it is difficult in ways that people aren't expecting, almost.
Well, I'm not going to throw shade on people I don't know and people who are strangers and people who are your friends, but they sound like big idiots to me. Because I think if you're expecting it to be breezy and easy to get a bunch of elephants across the savannah, then I don't know what kind of elephants you've been getting across the savannah.
You know, but... like the first time I taught this, I made a huge error because, you know, you do that thing where you read the rule book and then you kind of give your like little like short pitch for why people should be excited about the game.
Yeah.
And I was like, in this game, we're going on a little elephant road trip from one side of the savannah to the other. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, easy breezy, hanging out together,
right,
playing
right,
elephants.
Yeah. So, Tom, I'm gonna rind that one back a bit and say, you're a big idiot.
But in subsequent games, I've warned people that it's like a difficult
This ain't no elephant road trip,
it ain't
if that's what you're thinking.
Trip. It really isn't. Although some people online seem to think that it's really easy, it might just be how good your brain is at adapting to a new puzzle.
Got it.
Because Tembo has quite a unique kind of structure to it. You've got this layout of tiles that represent the savannah, and you're trying to get your elephants from one end to the other. And on your turn, you have one of two options, both of which involve playing a card from your hand. These cards are multi-use. They have their main sort of body of the card shows all these different circles. They're square cards with all these circles on them. And you can play those cards onto the board to sort of start creating paths for the elephants to go and walk on. So you might place a little path that goes two up and then left one and then up one if you want or whatever. They might have trees on them as well, which we'll get back to later. Or they might have watering holes, which we'll also get back to later. So you can place those onto the board. And they're going to sort of start building out the landscape.
Creating a map.
The other thing you can do is play a card to place elephants. And in the top corner of the card, they will show you the exact pattern you have to place elephants in. So it might be like a little L shape, or it might be like a straight line, or it might be a little diagonal with two of them. But you must place exactly those elephants in exactly that configuration. And you also must play that card based on the orientation you are sitting in. So they have a little arrow on them that's like, this is your north, and you must always play with that arrow facing up for you.
Got it.
Which means that you can't like you can't freely rotate it to fit the map that you're building. So you're simultaneously trying to build out a map that has these nice clean pathways whilst also playing elephants to that map so that you're getting energy, which stops you from losing the game, or watering holes, which get you more elephants, or eventually trying to get to these landmarks because you need to visit all the landmarks before you can get to the sort of end of the race
as it elephants were. Love tourism.
They love tourism. They love seeing the lake.
Yeah.
And the trees.
Nearly the elephant packed his trunk and took 18 rolls of Fujifilm color film for his camera.
Yes. The really sort of strange part of this game comes with the two extra cards that you have in the deck. Because all of the cards just have these sort of places to put elephants and ways to place elephants. But there's two other kinds of cards. Card number one is the Matriarch card, which is the big, like, ooh rule when you teach the game. Because when you play a Matriarch card, you pick up this big elephant, the Matriarch,
yep,
and you move it to anywhere you want along your route of placed elephants, usually to, like, the end of the route, right? Like, where you've currently got up to on the board.
Yeah.
Then every player removes all of their elephants from the board. So you build out this route, you get the Matriarch to the end of it, then you pull off all the elephants, then you lose some energy, and you have a certain amount of energy. If you run out of energy, you lose the game. And then there's one other step that I can't remember. Oh, there, you refresh the trees, which get you energy. So there's this very interesting sort of, like, push and pull to the flow of things, where you build out this route and then you sort of demolish it by moving your sort of new start point, because then you start building out your next route from where the Matriarch now is.
Okay.
However, the other kind of card are lion cards. And when you pull a lion card, you immediately must play them. And then lions will try and move towards your big old conga line of elephants.
Yeah.
And if they reach some elephants, they eat them and remove them from the game permanently. You never get them back. And if you ever have both lions with your Matriarch, you just lose completely.
Okay.
So there's this interesting threat where you're trying to make sure that you're navigating your Matriarch, or, like, sort of, you want to move them very far forward, but you don't want to put them in danger.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you're kind of spacing out your plays of the Matriarch so that you can get a bit of distance, so you're not just moving it a single space.
Yeah.
And but you're also trying to manage the risk of, like, knowing how many cards there are in the deck and trying to make sure that you don't pull one at an inopportune moment.
Yeah, because having a whole bunch of elephants out there, that's like a breadcrumb trail for lions.
It's a delicious trail. But then the thing.
It's not, because the breadcrumbs are really big and they just eat one breadcrumb and that's bad.
Yeah. Or they could get on a tile with a load of breadcrumbs and they will eat all of them.
Yep.
If they land on a tile that has, like, a bunch of elephants, they're just all gone, which can be devastating, because if you lose all the elephants,
I can see this. I got to be honest, like, initially my very boring traditional brain was seeing, like, road builders and then building, like, a tower and then.
Yeah.
But now I see it. Now it's like, okay, yeah, the Matriarch, like, that's the hurdle catching up and hanging out with the Matriarch and then going ahead and continuing the movement.
Yeah.
It's very sweet. I like it.
It is. It has, and I think that the thing that makes this game, like, when you start playing it, it feels very, like, sweet and road trippy.
Yeah.
You're sort of just placing out your elephants, you're having a nice time.
And then
and
an
the
elephant
danger
dies.
Ramps up like crazy. And you immediately start having to, like, put out elephants as, like, bait for the lions.
Because
Because when a lion eats an elephant, it's full and it lies down and then it stands up again on the next card and doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So you have to deliberately leave out little treats for the lions to try and keep them away from the rest of the herd.
Do you, Tom?
You do. You have to leave sacrifices.
Oh, Tom.
And I think this is the thing.
Your children.
There is something like the elephants, the little pieces come in lots of different sizes, which is kind of fun, but there are baby elephant pieces.
Oh, no.
And you never want to put them out as, like, lion bait because it feels terrible.
Good
it
Lord.
Feels so
That's
bad.
Nature, though, right?
It is nature. On the nature
on
special.
On the nature special.
If you
Who would have thought we'd get into such nitty-gritty nature as this?
The thing that I think, so after playing a bunch of Tembo, like, so we lost the easiest scenario, like, right off the bat.
Okay, so you've answered, I had a very Billy basic question, which is this a fully cooperative game?
Fully cooperative. Right. Did not explain that. Apologies.
No. I got that sense, but now you've made it very clear.
Yeah, fully cooperative game. It is, and it has a bunch of different scenarios you can play, like lots of different map layouts that get procedurally more and more difficult. And there's also, like, a mini campaign mode you can play, as well as a solo mode. So there's lots of variability there. There's also events tiles you can play with to add some spice, or you can just play the nice basic version. And we played, like, the simplest scenario, and we lost very quickly. And I think the more Tembo I've played, the more I realize that it's a cooperative game that requires you to, like, concentrate hard the whole time. This is isn't one of those co-op games where you can, like, make some suboptimal plays here and there. It's like, no, you've got to be locked in from turn one.
Yeah.
You have to be really precise in counting exactly what cards are still in the deck. You've got to be really efficient with placing out your elephants. Oftentimes just placing one is a way better option than placing your whole pattern. You might be looking at it being like, oh, I can place three whole elephants. Why are you doing that? It's not furthering our goals. I scream at the other people around the table at game night.
I wonder why people aren't enjoying it.
But it's just so, like, when I finished my games of Tembo, I've been, like, brain tired because it requires so much collaboration and cooperation and communication the whole time. And that's fostered a real fondness for it in my head.
Yeah.
I really like this kind of co-op game that doesn't hold your hand in any way. It's like a very unforgiving puzzle and it likes it that way.
Like, solving those puzzles is, I think, like, some of the highest, like, moments in gaming, though. Like, that's a terrible sentence. That was idiotic. But you get the gist. I think back a lot to, like, when I first played Pandemic, I played it with my friend Steve, who had it. And we sat and we played two-player and we lost. Mm-hmm. And then immediately we were like, it was like, we weren't really playing board games at that point, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't a board gamer. Yeah. And so it was like, do you want to play it? Like, should we play it again? Like, or do we just go to the pub or whatever? And they were like, yeah, no, let's play it again. And we sat and we played it like three times in a row.
Yes.
And eventually we won. And I kind of wonder, like, if I hadn't done that and if I just kept playing it again for the first time with different people, mm-hmm. whether or not I would have loved that game as much. Because for me, it was that thing of trying to work out what the puzzle was.
Yes.
And being like, yeah, how do we do this? And then realizing how the game worked. And then from that, being able to, like, because now I think about the puzzle of Pandemic, and it's almost like, oh yeah, it's like, to me, it's like a classic, but I know how that works. Mm-hmm. Like, I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. But being in that mindset of not knowing how to do it and bashing our heads against it was so cool. And the feeling of cracking it, amazing.
That's the thing, is I think a lot of people, when we've played Tembo, when you lose, because you can lose in a whole bunch of ways, and they can often feel really like arbitrary and random the first few times you play. They can be real feel bad moments where you flip a card and you go, oh, and we just lose.
And that's true with Pandemic.
Right.
Like, the amount of times I played it, I had to look in the manual going, what happens when you run out of cards? And it's like, oh, we've lost. Like, you know, it sucks. But
and that's the thing, is I think that people are like, when I've played it with them, they felt like those losses are like really arbitrary and random, and they've left me feeling like,
and you're like, no,
yeah, exactly,
you fools.
I felt so frustrated because I feel like there's a really great piece of design in there, and that we weren't like playing optimally. And then it was very rewarding, like playing it a whole bunch of times in different groups, and then finally sitting down with the same group and playing it a few times in a row and cracking that puzzle for the first time. Felt so good. And I think that I'm glad that it's a game that kind of takes a while to really like show its full hand, even if those first few plays of it can feel like very brutal in ways that are like, you know, you can just pull a big stack of lion cards on the top of the deck and be like, well, we're dead.
Yeah.
But then you think about how can you possibly counter that, and you start like baiting them out with little baby elephants. I'm so sorry.
It sounds fascinating, and I think it sounds like it's an interesting problem with co-op games, and I think with non-co-op games as well, as if you have somebody who really understands the puzzle and other people don't, then it will just like spoil the experience for everyone else, like in a way that you kind of have to just tap out of it.
Yeah.
In the same way that like I really enjoy teaching people how to play Cosmic Encounter and just being there as like a rules sherpa to keep it flowing, because I know so much about that game now that like I'll demolish people if they've never played it before, because I understand the meta and I'll just eat them. And in the same way that like, you know, I think, you know, we both played a lot of the video game Destiny, and the best parts of that game are these raids, which are effectively like multi hour puzzles. Once you know how to do it, you can't really play it with people who don't know how to do it. But the only way you can is by being a kind of background Sherpa and just being like, you know, I'm just here. I'm not really going to get involved. And I think with that, it sounds the same thing. It sounds like you're at the point now where like you probably won't be able to play this with people who've not played it before. You have to just sit back and help them on the edge, but without really actually being a player.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like it's the kind of game where I'd want to like give some top tips at the top of the game, like just to get people rolling, and then let people kind of make their own mistakes.
Like just sit back and let them play it and be there for rules questions, because it's like in the same way if you finished a video game, you'd be like, you don't want to play it with someone who doesn't know the puzzles yet, but you might sit next to them, and when they get really stuck, you'd be like, well, do you want a tip?
Can I help you?
Do you want a little chip? It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, like,
honestly,
really fond of it.
Horrible game with elephants. Sign me up.
Yeah, it's great. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, the natural special, where we talked about nature, we talked about Perch, and we talked about Tembo Survival on the Savannah.
The big natural special.
Yeah, that's what we're definitely going to call it.
Great. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you again very soon.
See you soon.
Bye.